We are meeting in the Davis Committee Room 160 in the Capitol Building in Juneau. Please silence your cell phones. Make sure mine is too. Staff assisting us today is Linda with the Juneau LIO, and then Zach with House Records, and committee aide is Josh Appleby. Present, we have Representative Prox, Representative Hemshute, Representative McCormick, Representative McKay, Representative Story, Co-Chair Representative Ruffridge, and myself, Co-Chair Allard. We have a quorum to conduct business. Okay, our first item on today's agenda is going to be bring back HB 392, funding by House Resources before the committee. This is the second hearing on this bill. The amendment deadline was set already for April the 2nd at 12 p.m. I think I have a total of, let me go back through here, 14 amendments that we'll be addressing today. And we will also be proposing a committee substitute. Can I have a motion to adopt the CS as a working document, Mr. Co-Chair? I think it's on there for you. Did you put it on there for you?
Brief at ease.
I'll take a brief at ease, please. Calling the Education Committee back to order. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you. I move to adopt CS for House Bill number 392, Work Order 33-LS1453-T as our working document.
I object.
Hey, we have an objection. Would you like to speak on your objection?
Thank you, Chair Allard, Co-Chair Allard. I really like the original and support the original and would be able to withdraw a lot of amendments if we were just working with the original. So I object to the CS.
Okay. Thank you very much. And what I'm going to do next is, do you have any comments, Representative Story?
I think it'd be important to put what the changes are before the committee so the public listening can hear.
They are coming forward. Representative McKay, if your staff, Mr. Jepson would like to come forward to give a summary on the changes for the CS House Bill 392, that would be wonderful. Representative, it could be a demotion, it depends how you look at it. Mr. Jepson, if you could please put your name on the record and begin your summary of changes for the committee substitute.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay. So Section 1 deletes the previous section with had to do with broadband assistance grant funding, as that's no longer necessary in this bill. And the new Section 1 includes language which lines out the process for authorizing state-sponsored charter schools. Section 2 lines out the appeal process for charter school board termination appeals and designates the State Board of Education as the appellate, whereas previously it was the Commissioner of Education. Section 3 is the same as Section 3 in the previous version. Section 4 is a new section which adds conforming languages to the duties of the department to reflect the new policy regarding the authorization of state-sponsored charter schools. Section 5 is same as Section 4 in 33-LS1453Y, the version of the bill that was introduced to the committee. Section 6 is a new section which adds the special needs factor of 1.2 to the calculation of correspondence school funding. Section 7 is the same as Section 6 in LS1453Y. Section 8 removes and replaces Section 8 from LS1453Y, that was the teacher incentive bonuses. And the new Section 8 is actually an amended Section 7 of 1453Y, which changes the funding mechanism from $500 for every student who's determined to be reading deficient to $180 flat for every single student, regardless of their reading deficiency or testing levels. It also includes an extra $100 for students in Title I schools. Section 9 specifies an immediate effective date for the bill. Thank you, Co-Chair Allard.
Thank you. And Mr. Jepson, if you could stay in that seat, we're going to go through all our amendments. And when there are questions or information you'd like to give on those amendments, we'd like to have your input. OK, Okay, so here's what we're going to do today. So we have a CS in front of us. We're going to take action. We're going to hear all of our amendments first. I have the clear intention of moving this bill out of committee. If we don't finish it before floor, then we're going to recess. We're going to come back and we will move it off this committee today. If we have time for additional public testimony, we could do that. I've already taken public testimony. I've already closed public testimony. And again, if we have time, we could take up public testimony again. All right, so we're going to go ahead and move.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Committee to order. We still have your objection still stands. Representative Hemshoot. Okay. Mm-hmm. Could you please take the roll?
Representative Prox?
Yes.
Representative McCormick?
No.
Representative McKay?
Yes.
Representative Hemshoot?
No.
Representative Story?
No.
Co-chair Allard?
Yes.
Co-chair Ruffridge?
Yes.
Four yeas, three nays.
With a vote of four yeas and three nays, the CS version passes. Now we're going to move on to amendments.
Co-chair Allard, if I might.
Representative Hemshoot, do you think you can wait till I finish speaking before you interrupt?
Sorry, sure.
Thank you. So we will now adopt or move the CS version. Go ahead, Representative Hemshoot.
Story. Okay. Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. I just wanted to note that public testimony was referenced today on the agenda, and I know there's
people. Thank you very much. You've already said that to me outside, and I already gave you my speech of what we're going to do with public testimony. All right. So let's go ahead and do Representative Hemshoot.
I move Amendment 1.
Is there any objection?
Object.
Go ahead, Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. Amendment 1 changes the BSA amount to reflect an amount that would restore districts to an inflation-adjusted amount. So basically, all departments in Alaska's government have an adjusted base every year, including DEED. However, the schools don't get that adjusted base. So with the BSA being their budget, basically, this adjusts that budget to reflect inflation since the last substantial BSA increase. So this just makes up for inflation. Feels like it's fair. That's the change.
And just a quick question, and then I'm going to move on to Representative Prox. Are you looking at taking that increase from the PFD? Where are you looking at taking those funds from in the budget?
That's something we'd have to work out.
Okay. Representative Prox, did you have a question? No?
Thank you.
Anybody else? Representative Story?
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Allard, and to the committee. I think this amendment is really strategically important. It's important for getting our school districts some certainty. Very, very important. We have left them scrambling for several years because of how we do not fund districts till after their budgets are due to municipalities. That this would give them a clear increase that will help them plan and bring certainty and send a message to the public about how much we value education. We're going to take care of our kids here, give them a stellar education, and this just puts it on the path for doing that. It addresses the high cost of inflation that we have been having. And more and importantly, we did not want to use our COVID dollars to just supplant our commitment to our constitutional commitment to education. We want to supplement our education and make it strong. And we've lost our COVID dollars, which were for the issues of bringing our kids back to deal with their learning loss, went for counselors, for safety, for technology, all important things. But since we flat funded the BSA for so long, we have had to raise class sizes, lose a lot of electives, and this amendment turns that path around. And we can afford this, and I strongly urge a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Story. Representative Prox.
Just for clarity, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. For clarity, what's in the committee substitute right now is the $680 increase and this would increase the BSA to 1413. Is that correct?
Representative Hemshute.
Yeah, through Chair Allard, it would increase the BSA by 1413.
Right. All right, thank you. Does your objection still stand, Representative McKay?
Yes, it does.
Please call the roll.
Representative McKay.
No.
Representative Hemshute.
Yes.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Prox.
No.
Representative McCormick.
Yes.
Co-Chair Allard.
No.
Co-Chair Ruffridge.
No.
3 yeas, 4 nays.
With a 3 yeas and 4 nays, it fails. Next, we have amendment number 2.
I move amendment number 2, which is 33-LS1413T.15.
Okay. Is there an objection?
I object.
Thank you, Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. Through the chair, this amendment deletes the section authorizing the state board to authorize charter schools. And the reason for that is that's a really significant policy change that may be the correct policy change. I'm not saying that it's not what we need to do. However, I feel like we haven't really been informed to make a policy change of that scope. So when asking about the wait lists, we haven't been able to get accurate numbers about wait lists for charter schools. When asking about how those wait lists work, there hasn't been a presentation on charter schools in Alaska. So in the absence of a compelling reason to change what we're doing, since our charter schools are particularly successful, it feels like we're doing what we need to be doing and we shouldn't change it. So I just wanted to remove this section completely. Not that we couldn't revisit it next year or another time, but it feels like we're making kind of an uninformed major policy shift with this section. So this amendment simply removes that section at this time. We could revisit it, but at this time it would not go forward in this bill.
Thank you. Is there a question to the sponsor of the amendment? Thank you. Representative McKay, does your objection still stand?
Yes, it does.
Please call the roll.
Representative McCormick.
Yes.
Representative McKay.
No.
Representative Hemshute.
Yes.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Prox.
No.
Co-Chair Allard.
No.
Co-Chair Ruffridge.
No.
3 yeas, 4 nays.
4 nays to 3 yeas. Amendment number 2 fails. Representative Hemshute, amendment number 3.
Thank you. I move amendment number 3, which is T.28.
Object.
Go ahead, Representative Hemshute.
Thank you. This amendment does something similar, but actually takes it a step further, something similar to amendment 2. It would delete that language authorizing the state board to authorize charter schools. However, it would add a charter school appeal process and a study. And so the study is supposed to be done by February of next year. So it's some quick work on the part of DEED, but it would be the information that I feel like we need to make sound policy surrounding charter schools. So that study would help us to know more about how our charter schools are working, why families are choosing charter schools, whether we need more charter schools, and then any other recommendations that the department would find are needed in a study. So right now we don't have anything specific to Alaska charter schools. This would pause the idea of making the state board the authorizer by taking it out. And instead we would add this study in that would help us make an informed decision next year.
Mr. Jepson, do you have a comment?
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Chair McKay. We do not support this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Does your objection still stand?
Yes, it does.
Could you please call the roll?
Representative Hemshute.
Yes.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Prox.
No.
Representative McCormick.
Yes.
Representative McKay.
No.
Co-Chair Allard.
No.
Co-Chair Ruffridge.
No.
3 yeas, 4 nays.
With 3 yeas and 4 nays, amendment number 3 fails. Moving on to amendment number 4, Representative Hemshoe.
Thank you. I move amendment.
Just a second, please. Go ahead. I apologize.
No worries. I move amendment number 4, which is T10.
Object.
Representative Hemshoe.
Thank you. This amendment, if the charter language is going to stay in the bill, adds a section to make a recommendation by the local school board to the state board, who becomes the authorizer. And this just adds a layer of local input so that that local board can say, yes, we have the capacity for this charter school, or here's how we could shape this charter school to make it even better. So it keeps that sort of local control aspect of it. Even if the state board is the authorizer, which is fine, then the local board is not left out of the process.
Thank you. Mr. Jepson, do you have a comment?
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay. This is the first time we're hearing about this idea. There could potentially be some merit to it, but at this late date, if we're moving the bill today, I think this is just too soon to actually look into the policy call on this. And maybe further down the road, we could revisit this policy. So at this time, we don't support this amendment.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. And to the committee, I think that this is a very reasonable amendment, really strikes at the heart of letting the local community make sure they know from the outset that there's the interest and the local board can go through, vet it, give what their recommendation would be to the state board, which I think the state board would find very helpful in their decision-making process. So I think it's a really important first step. That is similar to what's in law now, but still would meet the intent of the sponsor wanting to have the state board approve it first, but it would give a local look that I think would be just critically important in their decision.
Chair Allard.
Thank you. Representative Hemshoe.
Yeah, I want to apologize that these amendments are our first look for a lot of people. I thought we had public testimony today and then amendments perhaps on Wednesday, and so I didn't come around to talk to people. So we did meet the amendment deadline, but I didn't actually get out and talk to people about the amendments, and I apologize for that. I just assumed that today was public testimony, amendments would be another day, so I made a bad assumption.
We already had public testimony. Representative McKay, does your objection still stand?
Yes, it does.
Brief headings.
Representative Rufford?
Just a brief headings.
Do you want to leave or remove your objection?
I remove my objection, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you very much. It looks like amendment number 4 passes. Moving on to amendment number 5, Representative Hemshoe.
I move amendment 5, which is T.18.
Object.
Representative Hemshoe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this goes back to what I feel is missing data that would help us make better policy. So in this amendment, nothing in the bill changes, except we add in that charter schools will submit a report every year, twice a year, on March 31st and October 31st, talking about their capacity, their enrollment at each grade level, what their waiting list looks like, and this is going to be at the school level. So each school would provide this data, helping us to kind of track the trajectory of our charter schools and get a better sense of specific information. So right now, as public schools, they're lumped in with everything else. This allows us a tighter, closer look at specifically that sector of public schools. So if we're going to be changing what we do with charter schools, which I don't think is a good idea since they're doing so well, but if that's what we're going to do, then let's make sure we're making the changes that need to be made based on data. So this provides that data.
Thank you, and I wanted to acknowledge that Representative Clome has joined us today. Do we have Deed in here to answer any questions? You do? Can I have Deed come up to the table? Please remain there, Mr. Jepson. Take a breath at ease. Jepson, if you could pull up a chair too. I'm going to start off with Mr. Jepson. Mr. Jepson, are you aware if we do this to all public schools or just are we just requesting this of charter schools? If you don't know the answer, Deed is here to help us.
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay. I would defer to Deed on their reporting and tracking procedures.
Thank you. If you're from Deed, if you could please put your name on the record, and if you can answer the question that I'm going to come forward, do we do this for other public schools, or are we only doing this for, do we do this for other public schools where they have to tell us how many kids are enrolled and tell us what their waiting list is, if any? Do we do this to other public schools, or are we just doing this for charter?
Through the chair, this is Deborah Riddle, for the record, Division Operations Manager at the Department of Education Early Development. We do collect some data on student demographics and counts per grade by school, so we have that information. We do not collect any information about waiting lists.
So just a quick follow-up with you. Do we already, everything that's done in this amendment, exception to a waiting list, do we already do this?
Through the chair, this is Deborah Riddle. Yes, we do.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions?
I have some questions.
Okay, go ahead, Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Riddle. So one of the things in this section, I mean, if it's redundant, I apologize for that. But, for example, charter school capacity. So, and then name and grade of each student. And I want to be really clear. We're not looking for names of kids. What we want is to make sure that if families have applied to multiple charter schools, that we can look in, we're looking for ways to have actual firm data that we could use to guide our policymaking on what do those wait lists actually have. Are they the same family on 5 wait lists, or is it really a unique list of people? We don't want wait lists. We want families to be accommodated. But right now, I'm not sure we have the information we need. The other part of this is it's a report out twice a year. We want to know that if a family wasn't accommodated in October, they have been by March, that kind of thing. So I apologize if this is coming at you really fast, but there are some unique things about charter schools that feel like we're not getting.
I just wanted to acknowledge that Representative Stapp has joined us this morning. Go ahead.
Through the chair, this is Deb Riddle. We collect data twice a year. The first time is in October, and that's the demographics and the student counts. And then we collect information at the beginning of the year about teacher vacancies. We collect data again in the summer for where they were at the end of the year and any of those specific pieces of data that apply to the student that did the full year. We do not collect the capacity of, we know the capacity for the public schools based on the facilities, and Karen Morrison can speak to that, but we don't collect it on, specifically through IEE, the Innovation Education Excellence on that. But we do collect it. We do have a student ID, by school, by teacher.
Representative, do you have a follow-up?
I do. Thank you. Follow-up through the chair. So do you have information now about waiting lists?
Through the chair, we do not.
And through the chair, follow-up. Thank you. Are you able, so would that end of year data collection, if we adjusted the date on this, is that what I'm asking to know is, what do those wait lists look like in October? What do they look like in March? What is a profile of the charter schools specifically, so that we can know if we're at carrying capacity, if we need to add charter schools? So these are questions that I have that so far I haven't found the data to answer. This amendment is helping me to get that data. Do we already have the information presented by this amendment?
Through the chair, we don't have the information on the waiting list. That's something we can add to one of our data collections, probably in the summer.
It looks like Mr. Jepson wants to comment. Go ahead, Mr. Jepson.
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay. Currently, it's up to the individual districts to publish those numbers. The Anchorage School District used to make those numbers publicly available. Recently, they stopped making them publicly available. I've been in touch with some of the school board members, and they agree that they should probably get those back out into the public domain. The numbers that we received that was presented to the committee came via FOIA request to the district. So Deed currently has no requirements, but the districts do have the numbers, and I believe it's up to them whether or not they choose to make them public.
Thank you. So Mr. Jepson, are we talking about that those numbers are able to be acquired by local government control?
Representative Allard, or excuse me, Co-Chair Allard, that's correct. If you reach out to districts, you should be able to get those numbers.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Representative Prox has a question.
Nope, my question got answered. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have your closing comments?
I have a question from Mr. Jepson or the sponsor.
Sure.
So through the chair to the sponsor or Mr. Jepson. So if that information is locally available, we are now making a state-level policy on something that has always been locally handled. So do we not need state-level data to inform that policy?
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay. I'd say that would be a policy call, and it could be an option. I'll leave that to committee members to come to their own conclusion. Maybe if our friends at Deed had anything to add or their opinion on that.
I think that's everything. Okay. Do you have a comment?
So, through the chair, the department only collects data that's required through regulation or statute.
Okay. So we already have that. Okay. Any closing comment, Representative?
Sure. Thank you. Yes, I appreciate the input into this amendment. I maintain we need clear data to make big decisions, and changing how we do charter schools since they are high performing feels like a big decision. We're about to change a system that's already performed well. If we're going to do that, I would like to have clear information on why we're going to do that. This amendment helps us get some of that information.
And I do believe those individuals come up. Representative Prox, do you have a question?
Thank you. Through the chair to the amendment, maker of the amendment. The Part D, the name and grade of each student on the charter school's waiting list. Why would we need to get that level of data?
Through the chair, to be very clear, at no point would the name be publicly available. That would be an internal data point. The reason we need that is right now, a family might say we're interested in multiple charter schools, so they put their name on multiple lists. So when we ask how many names are on a list, there might be 40 families who've applied to a charter school who have not gotten into that charter school. However, 20 of those families got into a different school, their first choice school instead of their second choice school. So we don't know that right now, to my knowledge. So by having the actual name and grade, we have a sense of who's actually waiting and not accommodated. And then by having the grade level, we also know where we need to be putting more effort, where we need to be growing the charter sector.
Okay, thank you. And
thank you, Representative Prox.
Same with the number of teachers and grade levels for which each teacher provides instruction. I don't believe that that's required of public schools currently. What would be the justification for that?
Through the chair. The justification for that is for us to start to get a sense of class sizes at charter schools, mm-hmm. and it would be great to have that for neighborhood schools as well if we don't already.
Thank you. Thank you. And so my comment would be that we already have information on public schools in general, so I'm trying to figure out why we're going to use names and grades and disclose more information. It seems to me it's a privacy issue too. Do you have a comment, Deed? No? Okay, thank you. All right, does your objection still hold? Or do you have a comment?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. It appears to me that the amendment number 5 gathers more information than what we're already gathering for the public schools. So I'm not really sure, unless I'm not understanding, that's what I just heard. So I don't know why we would need to gather more information from charter schools than we do from public schools. So I maintain my objection if that's true.
Thank you. And I just want to reiterate that charter schools are public schools. Okay. Thank you. So your objection. One last comment, Representative Hemshire.
Sorry, I thought I would do wrap up. Through the chair, if we're not getting this information for neighborhood schools, then I would welcome an amendment to do that as well. This just deals with we're making a change to our charter school policies. So to inform the changes we're making, it would be nice to have the data. So I'm not opposed to getting that same information on regular neighborhood schools as well. So this, I think, is just intended to help us make informed decisions.
Okay, thank you. Can you please call the roll?
Representative Prox.
No.
Representative McCormick.
Yes.
Representative McKay.
No.
Representative Hinshu.
Yes.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Co-chair Allard.
No.
Co-chair Rufford.
No.
Three yeas, four nays.
With three yeas and four nays, amendment number five fails. Moving on to amendment number six, Representative Hinshu.
Thank you. I move amendment number six, which is T.9.
Object.
Representative Hinshu.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. This amendment adds a new subsection to the bill that will help to track how the student allotment is being used. And so there will be a report to the department, and the department will keep a record of how families are using the allotment. And so it seems, and again, we may not have clear data on this, but it seems that right now every homeschool program runs their allotment in a different way, however they choose to. We're about to make a major investment into our correspondence schools. And with that investment, I would like us to have a pretty good sense of how those allotments are being used. Are they being used for travel? Are they being used for devices? Are they being used for books? And so to know more about how that public dollar is being invested would be helpful.
Thank you. And Mr. Jepson, did you want to speak on the fact that correspondence courses already report their spending, each individual family?
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay, to clarify that comment, it's reported online how much of the allotments are offered to parents. To my knowledge, the additional counting of the funds and where they were spent is not tracked. Thank you, Co-Chair Allard.
Okay, so Representative Hinshu, I know Deed's here too, and what I would say is that when individuals buy computers or any other supplies and stuff, they do have to report that back to the school district. Did you want Deed to come up here and be in further detail on how that works? Okay. Take a brief at ease. Call the Education Committee back to order. Thank you. Could you please put your name on the record? And if you could address the amendment in regards to correspondence courses accounting for their spending.
So through the chair, this is Deb Riddle with the Department of Education Early Development Division Operations Manager. As far as allotments to correspondence schools, that is up to the district to collect that information and track it.
Thank you. Is it already done at a local level?
That is up to the school district to be able to account for the funding, yes.
Okay, thank you. Do you have a follow-up, or would you like to wrap up your...
I'm prepared to wrap up if there are no questions.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. I guess in wrap-up, what I would say is we are investing public dollars, state public dollars, in correspondence schools. We're about to make an even greater investment in that, and I feel like there should be some accounting for that at the state level. So as much as I like local control, as much as I like the local decision-making, I'm not challenging the decision-making. I'm challenging the reporting. I want to know, as a policymaker, when we spend this money on correspondence schools, how are those allotments being used? And I think that's a fair question when it comes to using the public dollar. We need to know what's happening with it.
Thank you, Representative Hinshu. Please call the roll.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Prox.
No.
Representative McCormick.
Yes.
Representative McKay.
No.
Representative Hinshu.
Yes.
Co-Chair Allard.
No.
Co-Chair Rufford.
No.
Three yeas, four nays.
With four nays and three yeas, amendment number six fails. Moving on to amendment number seven, Representative Hinshu.
Thank you. I move amendment number seven, T25.
Object.
Representative Hinshu.
Thank you. Through the chair. This amendment adds to this bill a really important way of sort of improving overall teacher quality in our districts. It adds a pay incentive, which is something I think we all would like to support. And then that pay incentive is provided to teachers who have achieved national board certification. So these are kind of your black belt teachers. These are your folks who've gone above and beyond. And to become a national board certified teacher, right now in the state we only have about 300, This would reward those teachers for going to the next level of practice. So it's a teacher bonus incentive.
Thank you. So I have a question for you, Representative Hemshute. Would this include, I've heard a lot over the course of this session that they wanted bonuses to go to maintenance workers, janitors, administration, and other staff. Are we not doing, this incentive is only for teachers. Is that correct?
Through the chair, if there is, we did look for some sort of next level, and there is a way that we could do it for the classified staff because they have certain standards that they can work towards, extra training that they can do, but there's no formalized program for that, whereas National Board Certifications is a national program that already exists. So we could create that for, you know, next level people who are willing to do more training. But right now it doesn't exist. This is an actual program that teachers right now, 300 Alaskan teachers have gone through this, and you don't get through on your first try always. So it's quite an investment of time and effort on the part of the educator to go through the program. It's not a program. It's professional development where you come out of this a much better teacher than you went in just through the reflection on your own practice and the work that you do. So not everybody gets through on the first try. But as far as classified staff, we looked for a way to do it. We've talked with some folks and there is a way to do it, but it would require standing up a new effort.
Thank you, Representative Hemshute. Do you have an idea where this would come from in the budget or from the budget? What you would cut for this to happen?
No, I'd like it to be considered on its merits, and if it's a good idea, I think we can figure that out.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? Representative McCormick?
Thank you. Through the chair, I just want to comment that I think questions like that are better suited for the next committee that this bill is referred to, which is finance. I think we have a responsibility to look at the policy choices that we're making.
What are you talking about, Representative McCormick?
Just
my question?
Yes.
Do you have a question?
No, I don't.
Thank you very much. Mr. Jepson, would you like to make a comment or would you like to speak to this amendment, please?
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay. As we noted earlier, there was a teacher incentive program in an earlier version of the bill. We took that out and we fully support a teacher incentive bonus program, maybe as a separate bill. But we believe this bill, as an omnibus, how it is, should remain the same. I would also like to point out that the teacher incentive bonus language in this particular amendment is just a may clause. So there's absolutely no requirement that those bonuses would ever even get paid with this amendment. Thank you, Co-Chair Albert.
Thank you. Representative Prox.
Yes. Thank you. Just commented. Or, well, I guess question. It does say may. To the sponsor of the amendment, are school districts prohibited? Because I would think that this would be a negotiation element between the teachers' unions and the individual districts. And I would be surprised if they're prohibited from paying this bonus at the current time.
Would you like to respond, Representative Hemshute?
Yes, through the chair. In Section C, line 18, we talk about the department shall provide sufficient funding. So a district will do this on a reimbursement basis. So they may offer this incentive. They'd be crazy not to, but it's really their choice and they will be reimbursed if they choose to do that. There's also reimbursement to the teacher because there's an expense in enrolling in this program to attempt to get your national board certification.
Thank you, Representative Hemshute. No other questions? Please call the roll.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative, I'm sorry, McKay, do your objections still hold?
Yeah, and I'd like to maintain my objection basically because the education establishment in the state of Alaska aggressively has opposed any type of teacher raises or incentive bonus payments. In addition, there's significant concern in the building about how this program would be funded. So I oppose Amendment 7 and I maintain my objection. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. I apologize for not acknowledging you first. Representative, or if you want to go ahead and do a closing comment, you may.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. I'll just reiterate, this is the way we improve teacher quality in the state. This is one very important tool we could put in the toolboxes of districts right now to both incentivize teachers to attempt to become a board certified teacher. Not all succeed, but they become a better teacher in the attempt. And then those who do succeed, this could offer an incentive to them and be reimbursed for that. So this is a way to recognize the need to offer some incentives to teachers and a way to improve teacher quality overall.
Thank you. Does your objection still hold?
Yes, it does. And I call the previous question.
Take roll, please.
Representative Kinshu.
Yes.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Frost.
No.
Representative McCormick.
Yes.
Representative McCain.
No.
Co-Chair Allen.
No.
Co-Chair Ruffridge.
No.
Three yeas, four nays.
With three yeas, four nays, Amendment number 7 fails. Moving on to Amendment number 8, Representative Story.
I move Amendment number 8, which is T.5 in your packet.
Actually, it's T.8. Representative, I put them in order, so just as a reminder to the committee, T.8 would be number 8, Amendment number 8. Is there an objection?
I object.
Thank you.
Story, would you like to speak on your amendment?
Yes. This amendment would allow correspondence programs to receive full ADM, average daily membership multiplier in the foundation formula only. So it increases the correspondence rate from 9 to 100%, from 990 to 100%. It would have a projected cost of $14.5 million. What is currently in the bill is $47.5 million. So this is a much more reasonable amount.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Hemshoot?
Thank you. I just wanted to comment, if I might. This was what was requested by the superintendents last session. So there were a number of superintendents that came to us and asked for exactly this. And I know at some point we had a bill or something that did this. So I'm very supportive of this amendment.
Thank you. Representative Prox.
I think providing this extra funding could really improve student outcomes. There's a lot of work being done now in the correspondence schools, at least those in Fairbanks that I've visited, and it provides a lot more flexibility and better outcomes. I think we should encourage that.
Mr. Jepson, do you have a comment in regards to the amendment?
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay. I'd just like to say that anytime we change that correspondence factor, it's resulting in increased funding for districts. There's no actual requirement that they have to spend that increased funding on correspondence programs. So the bill is currently written represents a larger increase to education to the districts than decreasing that factor would. Thank you, Coach Allen.
Thank you. I wanted to acknowledge that Representative Ortiz has joined us this morning. Thank you for being here. Representative McKay, does your objection still hold?
Yes, I maintain my objection, and if I understand correctly, Amendment number 8 actually reduces funding for the education system in Alaska, so I therefore oppose Amendment 8, and I maintain my objection. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
I thank you, and I do apologize. I'm Representative Story. Would you like to give some closing comments on that, and then we can go back?
Yes. With the underlying bill, the correspondence programs, when we do the 6-80, will get an increase to their program. This is an increase, an additional amount of $14.5 million. And I believe that when the districts do make sure correspondence programs get an increase, that would be in this amendment.
Thank you, Representative McKay. I apologize.
I maintain my objection.
Brief at ease.
Let me brief at ease. Calling the Education Committee to order. Could you please call the roll?
Representative McKay.
No.
Representative Hemshoot.
Yes.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Prox.
No.
Representative McCormick.
Yes.
Co-Chair Allard.
No.
Co-Chair Ruffridge.
No.
Three yeas, four nays.
With three yeas and four nays, Amendment number 8 fails. Moving on to Amendment number 9, Representative Story.
Thank you. I move amendment number 9, which is T.7.
We have it as T.6.
Okay, sorry.
Member number 9.
Madam Co-Chair.
Let's go back to her moving the correct amendment.
Sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, and I apologize. When you read the in order, I obviously got them out of order. So,
all right, move forward.
So amendment number 9 would be T.6. Is mm-hmm. that correct? Okay. I move amendment number 9, T.6.
Representative.
Object.
Go ahead, Representative Story.
Yes. This amendment, inflation proofs for the next fiscal year. It's based on a 4-year average of the Consumer Price Index for Urban Alaska Anchorage. This 4-year average helps smooth out the big ups and downs that can happen with inflation. It provides more stability for the districts. Legislative Finance provided this number for me at the 4.3%. This amendment is really important. And why I think it is so important is it allows our school boards to plan their budgets in a more efficient way. Our local school board members and school staff have been asking for inflation proofing and make sure that we keep up with inflation and some fixed costs. It may prevent pink slipping, as the legislature often decides if there will be any education increases after school boards by law are required to turn their budgets into local governments. And it just would help set up an improved funding policy system by our legislature, by this body. Right now, we have a very ineffective funding policy system, and it really sets our districts up for failure. If schools knew their number ahead of time, it would help them address fixed costs and plan for interventions. So I think this is a game changer for school boards. And I think it's really important that we do it for next year for sure, because they've been living in so much instability. And of course, we wanted to provide a number sooner this year. It has not worked out that way, but this number can really help them plan for next year, because it inflation proofs the 680 BSA. So I think it is just critically important that as the body, the House Education Committee, we help this whole body set good education funding policy. And by inflation proofing the BSA, this really does that.
Thank you. Mr. Jepson, do you have a comment in regards to this amendment?
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay, we do not support this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Yes.
Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you. Through the chair, can you elaborate on your why you don't support the amendment?
I'd like to.
Okay.
It's not
nice to have the sponsor weigh in.
I got to wait for.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, through the chair, I was asking why this is not supported, and the sponsor chose to answer.
So I want to make sure that we don't go with open dialogue, though, but you have a question, Representative McKay, in regards, do you support it or not?
Yes, I maintain my objection. There's two problems with Amendment 9. Firstly, it reduces the power of the legislature to appropriate, takes that power away from the legislature, and it obviously leaves out the plan for what if the consumer price index actually went down. So for those two main reasons, and pretty powerful reasons, I continue to oppose Amendment 9.
Thank you. Do you have a question to the representative?
I do. Through the chair, Rep Story, this is based on a 4-year average, right? So a downturn, if it wasn't a 4-year downturn, would be absorbed?
Through the chair, yes, this amendment was vetted by Legislative Finance, and they recommended, rather than doing a 1-year inflation setting, to do the 4-year average. So it takes into account what Rep. McKay is concerned about, that it smooths out over 4 years any downturn that happened the year before. And then if you get a huge upturn, it would just have the district's budgets going up and down, and this is a smooth average.
follow-up?
One follow-up. Go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair to Rep. McKay. When is the last time CPI went down?
You never know. It could go down. I can't predict the future, and neither can any of us.
Thanks.
Thank you. You have closing comments, Representative Story.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, Representative Prox, I apologize. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, hi. There's a couple of reasons that I am not in favor of this. One is that the CPI isn't necessarily related to the cost of operating a school. There's different considerations in any business. So the change in the CPI doesn't necessarily mean anything specific to the change in the operating cost of a school. And the other is that I would say that it's unlikely that the inflation rate is going to go down. Anything can happen, but this would have essentially create an automatic increase in funding education, which I agree is important, but there are all kinds of other needs that we have to consider in the budget. In particular, I'm finding there's a lot of evidence of a huge need for more emphasis on mental health services and et cetera. And we might find out that there's possibilities of using Medicaid money to provide services through schools, which would reduce the expense required or the funding required for schools. And just there's just a whole stack of other needs that we have to consider in terms of mental health spending, which relates eventually to education. But this would constrict us to funding increases in education and decrease the ability for us to perhaps fund something else that might even be a more important need. So I would oppose this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Prox. Representative McCormick.
Thank you, Chair Allard. I want to say, firstly, I support this amendment. And I guess that's the question that I want to ask this body, not really like I want an answer, but if we are not funding our schools with consideration for inflation, how are we adequately funding them? Pretty simple question. But I think if we are not adjusting our formula for inflation, then we're failing to provide our constitutional obligation, which is to adequately fund public schools. So I appreciate the member from North Pole speaking to mental health needs. I agree with that. But there's a number of things we can do. Just funding one thing doesn't mean we take everything off the table. I think we should do this. And I think it meets our constitutional obligation. So I urge members to support this amendment. Thank you, Chair Allard.
Closing comments, Representative Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. Again, I appreciate the comments from committee members. I would note that we have flat funded education since 2017. Inflation has just been skyrocketing since then. This averages out inflation. This helps districts with their fixed costs. And again, as the education committee recommending policy, this will go to the finance committee. They will be looking at it. But I think it just shows a strong recognition from this committee about the cost of inflation. It addresses it for next year. And again, we still want to provide more stability, more realistic BSA increase numbers that can help with outcomes in the classroom. And so I urge a yes vote.
Thank you. Please, Representative McKay, do you hold your objection?
I'm maintain my objection, and I would point out that the $680 increase in this bill is the largest BSA increase in state history. And that when you look at the amount of money that our school districts get, both federal, local, and state, that total amount has been increasing for the past 10 years. So the notion that we are just starving the education establishment is frankly highly debatable. Thank you. I maintain my objection.
Thank you. I just want to remind the committee that the sponsor of the amendment gets the last word. So, Representative McKay, in the future, if you can say your comments before.
Okay.
And I'll grab my attention. Thank you very much. And did you want to respond, Representative Story, just really quick? I know you did, but.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. I just know that our districts are really struggling with the years of how we have flat-funded education. And while the COVID dollars have been welcomed, they were for specific intentions to help districts with mental health counselors, technology help, and we have not been supplementing those efforts, and this would help us catch up on that. So I urge a yes vote.
Thank you. And Representative McKay, your objection still is maintained.
Yes, I do, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. Go ahead and take the roll, please.
Representative McCormick.
Yes.
Representative McKay.
No.
Representative Himshue.
Yes.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Truss.
No.
Co-Chair Allen.
No.
Co-Chair Ruffridge.
No.
3 yeas, 4 nays.
With 3 yeas and 4 nays, amendment number 9 fails. Moving on to T5, Representative Story. That would be amendment number 10.
T5, which is amendment number 10, I'm going to withdraw because that would be ongoing inflation proofing, not just the 1 year that just did not pass. So
thank you, Representative Story. We have T26, Representative Story, which is amendment number 11. T26.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Committee back to order. Representative Story.
Yes, I move amendment number T.26.
Okay, amendment number 11.
Object.
Representative Story.
Yes, this would delete the 180 in reading help and put in $500 to help. And as we all know, learning to read is a foundational skill for children to understand other academic subjects. Children who are reading by the end of the third grade are more apt to like school, do well, and graduate and go on to successful post-secondary careers. This is a priority of our State Board of Education. The READ Act focuses on improving the reading ability of our children and the instructional knowledge of our school staff. As we know, our reading data shows our children are nationally behind their peers, although we know they are just as capable. This amendment gives more targeted reading support to K-3 children in our schools to support the READS Act. And we know these services, we need to provide professional development. We need to provide inside and outside regular school hours tutoring, provide regular updates to parents and guardians, and be culturally responsive. Other states who have done reading initiatives such as ours have appropriated significant funds for the child's reading improvement plans and interventions and professional training for teachers with success. And so I believe this is targeted help, and this amount would do much to move the supports in place for our kids to be reading at grade level.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, to the sponsor of the amendment, did you by chance get a calculation of how this would affect essentially the base student allocation? It wouldn't raise it by 500 per student because we're just talking about the first 3 grades, but there is some percentage. Have you perchance?
Through the chair, thank you. Thank you for that question. I think Deed could come up and possibly give us an answer to that amount. I'm trying to do the quick math in my head, but I'm trying to think there's the number of kids K-3 who are in those grades and trying to do quick math. And I think Rep. Himshue might have a comment.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Jepson.
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay. So this K-3 READS Act funding is actually outside the formula. It's not getting any of the multipliers. So it doesn't affect the formula from that perspective. It would be a separate funding account.
Thank you. Representative Prox, you have a follow-up?
Well, just comment. Yes, I recognize that it's outside of the basic formula, but when we were discussing the READS Act almost 2 years ago now, my understanding, I guess, was that the improving reading, reading ability in the early grades would reduce the need for extra help and et cetera in later grades. In other words, we were offsetting something. And if we're going to put in, well, the other thing that I thought was that we were not following a effective reading program. And so we were going to take some, or the schools were going to take some money that was spent on an ineffective program, improve the ability of teachers to teach reading, and therefore it would be more or less cost neutral. Little scope creep for the whole thing. But I don't think that this is a good idea to just assume that everything else continues to need funding, because that might not be the case, should not be the case. It's just, how do you manage education funding? So I would be opposed to this.
Thank you. Representative Hemshoot, you have a question?
I think it's a comment. Okay. Thank you. Through the chair, I just want to remind the committee what all the READS Act is asking in grades K through 3.
Representative Hemshoot, can you speak directly to the amendment?
Sure. The amendment would support the after-school tutoring, which requires paid people to act as tutors. It would support the individual reading intervention plans. These are examples of what this would support. Those intervention plans could be as many as 70% of the kids need those. And then it reduces, of course, but that's a pretty heavy lift for the kindergarten and first grade teachers until we, you know, until the intervention plans are effective, and then the number should be much smaller by third grade. But still, each of those plans requires time and personnel and then outreach to families. And then there's also the summer school for kids. So all of those are additional expenses that districts are bearing right now. So even with the existing reading instruction that may be replaced or added to through the READS Act, there's additional funding required. And then the hope is, when kids are reading at grade level by third grade, it's not that we need to do less, it's that we're going to be able to do more and have better outcomes in grades after that. So I think this amendment provides the support that districts need to implement the READS Act with fidelity.
Thank you. And I have one quick question to the sponsor. Have you decided where you would think this money would come from in the budget?
To the chair, co-chair. I believe a House Finance would be able to best make that decision.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Is your objection maintained? Or go ahead, Representative Story, I apologize.
Thanks for all the comments. I just wanted to remind people that we have heard from superintendents, school boards, teachers about all the extra interventions, the curriculum purchases, which I wanted to remind people too that DEED has put significant dollars to districts to help with the READS Act, but there's been an acknowledgement that there's a tremendous amount of resources that need to go into making sure these are all these interventions, summer school, which like for the Juneau School District is $800,000 to do summer school. It's quite hefty price tag, and this amendment tends to help with those interventions so our kids with the goal of reading by the end of third grade.
Thank you, Representative Hemshoot. Representative McKay, do you maintain your objection?
Yes, I do, Madam Co-Chair.
Could you please call the roll?
Representative Prox.
No.
Representative McCormick.
Yes.
Representative McKay.
No.
Representative Hemshoot.
Yes.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Co-Chair Allen.
No.
Co-Chair Rufford.
No.
That's 3 yeas, 4 nays.
With 3 yeas and 4 nays, amendment number 11 fails. Moving on to amendment number 12, which is T7, Representative Story.
I move amendment number 12, T7.
Thank you. Go ahead. Is there an objection?
I object, yes.
This amendment keeps the 0.9 ADM for correspondence, but allows them to still be included in the special needs factor. Correspondence schools well important, do not have the same duties, obligations, and responsibilities that our neighborhood schools do. It's a fact that our neighborhood schools have more facilities to care for and more public use. They have custodial and maintenance costs. They have to pay insurance costs for their buildings, which have risen extensively. The neighborhood schools do. School districts have legal obligations that their correspondence programs do not have. With special education programs, the legal responsibility rests with the district. If a correspondence program is sued by a parent, it is the district who is responsible. The neighborhood schools provide student activities and sports for the community, and oftentimes their peers in the correspondence programs play in the local sports activities, and so it costs neighborhood schools. They are happy to include other correspondence peers, but there is an extra cost for that. And the larger neighborhood schools provide classes that correspondence schools take. And yes, many correspondence students pay a stipend, but it does not add up for the total cost of the teacher. The districts must provide staff training, which is open to all public employees, which is our correspondence employees too. And so it's appropriate that we recognize the neighborhood schools have more responsibilities, and the correspondence school should stay at the 0.9 level.
Thank you. And I'm going to go to whether Mr. Jepson or Representative McKay in regards to this amendment. Mr. Jepson.
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Chair McKay. I just want to, Representative McKay, I just want to quantify some math here with this amendment. So currently in the bill, the correspondence students are treated as 1.0 multiplied by 1.2 means the factor applied to them is 1.2. If we go back and we drop what the students are allowed as instead of 1, they're going to go down to 0.9. The net factor here would end up being 1.08 for correspondence program. So as the bill is currently written, it's 1.2. If we go back to the 0.9 per ADM per correspondence kid, it would be 1.08 as the correspondence factor net. Thank you, Co-Chair Allard.
Thank you. And where do you stand on this amendment?
We believe that we need to increase the funding to correspondence schools as the bill is currently written. And just one more time, when we increase that factor, it increases a school's district's funding. So there's more money going to education, and there's no requirement that that money has to even be spent on the correspondence programs. It's just more money for districts, and we hope they spend it on correspondence programs. Thank you, Co-Chair Allard.
Thank you, Mr. Jepson. Representative McKay.
So all that means we oppose Amendment 12.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, Chair Allard. Through the chair, Rep. McKay, at one point last year you said 0.9 made sense to you because of the fact that correspondence programs don't operate buildings. Have you changed your mind?
I don't recall saying that, Representative Hemshute.
These are about questions. I'm not sure that we should be calling out our fellow committee members. You could do that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was a question.
Representative Story, do you have, or anybody else have any more comments?
I can do a wrap up.
Go ahead, wrap up.
Yes. How the current bill is, it's an increase of $47 million to our correspondence schools when you increase the 0.9 to 1 and you apply the special needs factor. Leaving it at 0.9 would bring it to a $30 million increase for correspondence schools, and that includes the BSA increase. So I think we have given them a significant amount of new money, and I think it's appropriate because the neighborhood schools do have more expenses that they do give to correspondence schools in the ways that I mentioned in my opening statement.
Thank you very much. Representative McKay, do you maintain your objection?
Yes, I do, Madam Co-Chair.
Please call the roll.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Prox.
No.
Representative McCormick.
Yes.
Representative McKay.
No.
Representative Hinshu.
Yes.
Co-Chair Allard.
No.
Co-Chair Rufford.
No.
Three yeas, four nays.
Three yeas, four nays. Amendment number 12 fails. T27, that's amendment number 13. Representative Story.
I move amendment number 13.
Object.
Representative Story.
This amendment would increase the base student allocation in 26 by $205 million in state aid. It is basically addressing that we haven't kept up with our constitutional obligation to fund K-12. It's our opportunity to change that, to keep class sizes down, to keep counselors, librarians. I don't want it to be under our watch that we have to close correspondence, career tech classes, to raise class sizes. This will really reassure our staff, which we desperately want to keep our teaching staff and our paraprofessionals, and let our parents know that, yes, we are going to fund education this year with our 680 increase, and we are going to increase our funding for next year. Again, it is a significant policy, education funding policy, that this group can send to the whole body the message that we need to be funding districts in advance. It will so much stabilize and give hope really to our districts that, yes, we support public education and we're keeping up with our constitutional amendment, our constitutional obligation to maintain our public schools.
Representative McKay.
My office opposes Amendment 13, and I'd like to point out that our bill, the underlying bill that we're proposing, already contains a $680 BSA increase, which is the largest in state history. And as you recall, when we started the session, the BSA increase that was being discussed was $340. So we've already doubled that in the legislative process that we've been going through for approximately 90 days now. So we don't see why another $120 increase is necessary. We're already increasing it significantly. And as I already mentioned before, when you consider federal and local contributions to education, and if you refer to the Rutgers study, Alaska's education system is very adequately funded. So we oppose Amendment 13.
Thank you. Is there a comment, Representative Hemshoot?
Thank you, through the chair. I'd just like to draw the committee's attention to the bill we supported last year, which was a $680 increase.
The amendment.
Which had a step up of $180, which is reflected in this amendment. So I think we recognized last year the need to go from 680 to another 120 this year, which would make it 800. So I think this amendment just supports where we stood 1 year ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fox.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just a comment to the, keep mentioning that the state has a constitutional obligation. But that can't, the wording is to establish and maintain a system of public schools. That cannot mean that whatever the districts ask for, we are required to fund. So I just don't buy into that argument. And it's a policy call of the legislature, whatever fund we, or whatever amount we set. And I think a $680 basic student allocation is pretty generous for 1 year. We'll see how it works out. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative McCormick.
Thank you, through the chair. Just on the sentiment of adequately funding schools, there are schools in the state of Alaska where students have to be around black mold. I represent a school where a ramp collapsed. I have one school that is in managed retreat and does not have bathrooms. These are just a few of some of the issues, and so I just want to ask the committee, are we adequately funding schools? Are we maintaining public schools? I don't think so.
Thank you, Representative McCormick. Are there any other questions? Representative Story, and wrap up.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Allard. One of the hardest things for me to hear and that I is from parents, from our students, about how services to their education, to their children's education, has been disappearing over the last few years. And I firmly believe we have not been maintaining our constitutional obligation to keep up with fixed costs, inflation costs, let alone costs to increase and adjust to new needs of today in kids' education system. So again, this will go a big way, I think, in sending that message to the public to our teaching staff that we are going to plan for what we know and we have heard testimony on our increased costs that our districts have been facing. I urge a yes vote.
Thank you. Representative McKay, do you maintain your objection?
Yes, I do, Madam Co-Chair.
Please call the roll.
Representative Hinshu.
Yes.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Crox.
No.
Representative McCormick.
Yes.
Representative McKay.
No.
Co-Chair Allard.
No.
Co-Chair Ruffridge.
No.
Three yeas, four nays.
With three yeas and four nays, Amendment number 13 fails. Moving T13, Amendment number 14, Representative Story.
Thank you. I will withdraw that amendment since it is just higher amounts that we just voted down.
Thank you. Amendment number 14 has been withdrawn. Looks like we have some time left, and we're going to go ahead and move on to do some public testimony. Is there anybody in the room who would like to come up and testify? If you do, please come forward, sir. Go ahead and put your name on the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes. Go ahead and begin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. My name is Charles Van Kirk. I live here in Juneau. I've been here 64 years. I've been a product of the Juneau School District. I started in fifth grade here back in 1960. And I've had over 30 individuals in my family go through the school system here. That's kids and grandkids. What I see happening today is, and I can only speak to local. I understand that you are a legislature and you're looking at the full state. And so I apologize if I'm very narrow-minded, but it is specific to our Juneau school system here. The Juneau School Board has been put in a position for a number of reasons, not just there's local issues that have happened that have increased their challenges with regard to being able to properly fund our education to our children here in Juneau. The allocation, the basic student allocation, has been something that has exacerbated that problem with this particular school board. And so what it has created is an extreme division within our community of different communities within our community that disagree. They've been misled in some cases. And so it has become a very terrible situation here in Juneau that is being addressed through the proper recourse that we do have, which again is going to really challenge our community and the mental health of our children. You spoke to mental health. Let me tell you that it does have an impact when you take kids and you close their school that's been there. Am I up?
You're done. You want to wrap up your last couple sentences?
Yes. Well, I do support the increase that you have included in this bill for the BSA. That will help, but we need a lot more help, and I would really appreciate it if you would look to future funding methods to increases in possible inflation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Sure. Is there anybody else in the room that would like to come forward and testify? Please come up. If you could please put your name on the record and begin your testimony, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Louanne McVeigh. I live in Douglas, Alaska, and I appreciate all of the time and energy that you all put into this legislation. And I especially appreciate the amendments, which unfortunately, in my opinion, failed. I do support most aspects of this bill, especially concerning the raise of the BSA to at least $680. I'm speaking to you as a retired educator. I was a literacy leader in the Juneau School District for 20 years, and I worked with kids who struggled in reading. Their cause is especially important to me because what I see happening is as children come into schools and they might not have the appropriate background in what the schools have to offer, they struggle. And the more they struggle, the more behind they get. And it's really great to have a program, a reading program. And I know the Alaska Reads initiative has really been helpful, but what really makes a difference is additional targeted instruction. Instruction before school, after school, during school. That addresses the specific needs of the student. It costs extra money to bring those students up to the place where everyone else is, unfortunately. It costs money to make a difference for kids. I have two young grandchildren, and they will be in the schools soon. I don't anticipate that they'll have struggles with literacy, but you never know. You just don't know who will be the ones who have a hard time. I really urge you to reconsider your turning down of the amendments that were offered, especially regarding teacher training and additional help for children. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. I just want to make it on public record. We're not taking any further public testimony. We have a lot of calls to get through. If you do want to go ahead and testify and you don't get in with us, you could do house.education@aklake.gov and you can put your testimony in an email.
Thanks, Chair.
Is there
check if there's anyone else in the room who's maybe been waiting 2 hours?
Brief Eddies. Calling the Education Committee to order. Is there anybody else left in the room that would like to testify? Please come up and put your name on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lisa Skiles-Parody. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. We represent superintendents, elementary and secondary principals, school business officials, and essentially all education leaders in school districts across Alaska. And just briefly, want to thank the committee and Representative McKay for bringing the legislation forward. As you know, we were strong supporters to SB 140 and the components of it, and are glad to see some of those provisions in this legislation. Specifically, we appreciate the 680 inside the BSA. I think, as you all know, and we're all, I think we have expressed through session, you have said the importance of having the money inside the model does help to provide stability for districts. And that's what we're all shooting for, is to provide stability for districts, for our administrators to be able to have their contracts issued and signed, to be able to make those decisions like any business would, knowing what their budget's going to be. So inside the model is a high priority, and we're happy to see that. Do appreciate the amendments that were brought forward, trying to inflation-proof it. We know that the actual inflation-proof number is 14-13, that you've heard from your constituents is a more accurate reflection of where we'd be had we been receiving support over the last decade. So that number is more akin to the actual number, but 680 is a great start and we are grateful for it. also appreciate the transportation funding. I think Co-Chair Allard and certainly Representative McKay, your districts, I think, have demonstrated how critical having some additional transportation funds are. We see that need across the state quickly. READZAC support, that only way we're going to implement that important act is to get some additional funding. So thank you for that. And to close, I would just say we support charter schools, believe in them. They are our public schools as well. Appreciate the supports in this bill to make them easier and more supportive to the families and the children who want that option. We do not support the approval of the authorization to the state board. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else in the room that would like to come forward and testify? Okay, seeing no one in the room, go ahead and move to online, please. And the first person, Mr. Neese, can you hear me?
Yeah, hi, this is David Neese.
You have 2 minutes if you could put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Sure. My name is David Meese. I currently reside in Cooper Landing. 10 years ago, I was a member of the 2014 Education Sustainable Education Task Force, and we went over a lot of issues, and I have sent a copy of the report to Representative McKay. This is an excellent bill, the way you've got it written. I was very happy to see that you took out the National Board certification. There are 203 teachers in the state of Alaska that have that certification, and four of the five big districts already give a stipend for having that. So they're already getting paid for having that high standard. The big issue here is the same issue as 1980s correspondence wars. It's local control. The biggest issue that you have in your charter schools is local school districts can prohibit housing charter schools in your public school buildings as an option, and Anchorage does do that. So this makes the charter school process difficult because they have to go find a space to rent because the district does not allow you to rent space inside their school buildings to co-house them. And that just never made sense to us 10 years ago. It doesn't make sense to us now. If you have 50% of your building occupied with children and teachers, why would you not use the other 50% to co-house at a cost for the charter schools? So that's the only thing I see missing in this. I recommend that you guys pass that on and get a chance on the floor to fix that part of the charter school clause. Most states do allow multiple authorizers of charter schools. It's exactly the same as breaking up the baby belts. You guys are making it easier for people to get the schools the children want, which is the fundamental of local control. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Penny Baldia Badla. If you can put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead with your testimony, please. You have 2 minutes.
Badla. My name is Penny Badla. I'm from the Kenai Peninsula Borough, and I am on the school board. I have been a teacher in education for 40 years, and I relish what we do for our students, and I'm very concerned going forward with that we have not had continued support, and we always, in the last few years, have to fight for the support in educating our children. I'm in favor of the S-680 within the formula, not one-time funding. I really support the Alaska Reads Act. It's essential, and I hope that we know that Alaska Reads Act and what we do for our students and our children in reading, especially students who have issues or difficulties, that ability to support them and give them what they need is essential. And I'm sorry, I had a different thing to say earlier, but I'm very frustrated. I support local control over our charter schools. And in the Kenai Peninsula, we do house some of our charter schools within our local schools. So what I'd like to say is I'm in favor of allowing us to be in control over our own schools. Our districts know what is best for our charter schools. We have worked incredibly hard to maintain those charter schools and to have those offerings for all students, and I'd like to continue to be able to do that going forward. I applaud you for getting together today, and I applaud our legislators, and I do a shout-out to Ms. Hemshoot and Ms. Story and Mr. McCormick for their willingness to step up and step out and know that we need to continue to support our students and make sure that they have the education we have, and they do.
Thank you for your testimony today. Next, we have Rachel Lord. Rachel, are you on the line?
Thank you, Chair Allard and members of the committee. My name is Rachel Lord. I'm a parent and business owner. Apparently, I'm also a member of the education establishment. I'm employed, not with anything relating to schools. I'm a hardworking Alaskan. I send my two children to our neighborhood K-12 schools. I was educated in America's K-12 schools. My husband graduated from Homer's K-12 schools. And I believe in the state's constitutional obligation to adequately maintain functional public schools for my kids and future generations of Alaskans. So I think that's the definition of the education establishment, as I've heard. I strongly support the increase to the BSA that's included in this bill. it's true that money's not magic, but more money does mean better outcomes when we have stable, consistent funding for our teachers, for the people, and that really does mean better outcomes. Without funding that tracks with inflationary pressures, you aren't going to find success in any business, including in our schools. The state, with the functional and engaged Department of Education, has a fantastic opportunity to dig into systemic opportunities for improving our school outcomes. That requires honest leadership. I strongly support maintaining local school board engagement with charter school applications within their districts. I also strongly support correspondent students, and I also strongly support the legislature requiring increased reporting and standards to follow the public dollars to those students and families. Finally, as I've been listening this morning, it's been incredibly confusing. It's incredibly difficult as a citizen to follow along when BASIS isn't updated with amendments. I don't know who's responsible for making that happen, but it is rare in my experience with trying to follow the legislature that there is such a gap and lack of transparency in the committee process. Please also ensure that emails that are received to the committee on this bill and others are included on BASIS in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Caroline Storm.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Caroline Storm. I'm the Executive Director of the Coalition for Education Equity. Thank you so much for taking public testimony this morning. I was encouraged to hear the amendments presented on the into the committee this morning and disappointed that none of those passed. We need additional money inside the BSA, and so as the coalition and as myself personally, I support the 680 increase within the BSA. It is not enough. As Representative McCormick said, we are not adequately maintaining a system of public education when our kids are going to school in buildings riddled with black mold that are partially condemned, that do not have plumbing or working fire suppression systems. We do not support the charter schools being approved at the state level. One thing that I think is very important to recognize is that school boards are elected officials, and the State Board of Education is an appointed board. And so the citizens of Alaska have no oversight as to how those charter schools are approved at the state level if they are approved by somebody that is appointed rather than elected. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Winter Marshall Allen. You can put your name on the record and begin your testimony, please.
Hello, I'm sorry. Let me just step away from my classroom. My name is Winter Marshall Allen. I am an educator at Homer High School. I am calling in to testify today and stepping away from my classroom in order to do so because I believe it is incredibly important that the funding situation for our public schools becomes addressed. I am a teacher who has previously experienced the lack of funding and what it does when a teacher is pink slipped and you don't know what's happening next and you don't know how you're going to be able to provide for your family, let alone provide for your community because supposedly your district doesn't have money to be able to pay your salary, but yet later the legislator will decide that there's going to be funding and then some of us will get our jobs offered back to us. This yo-yo game that we're playing with people's lives and the education of our students is totally wrong and is inhumane in so many ways. We can do better as a legislation. There were some really good amendments with regards to data and how the information of how the money can be better used so that we can better understand how the policy looks on the line with education. I would just ask that we can come together and we listen for these solutions that actually meet the student needs. We need the transportation funding. We need to address student need and student choice. There should be charter access, but there should also be local control and local influence on what schools are approved in areas so that they best meet students' needs. As a special education teacher, what does that mean for my students with disabilities? How are they really serviced in charter schools? There was language in this bill that's supposed to help support that for correspondent schools, but that doesn't mean teleservices because research says that that's not best practice. So I really hope that we dig deeply into this language that we're talking about facilitating so that it really does meet the best needs of our students here across the state and of Alaska, not just on the Kenai Peninsula or in Homer, where I currently teach. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Patrice Lee. If you could please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Education Committee. My name is Patrice Lee. I live in Fairbanks. I want to thank you for the $680 increase in the BSA. There are many parts of this bill that do not meet with the approval of the large number of people I work with on a daily basis in the community. Charter schools need to remain in local control. But I did want to talk today about some of the ramifications of lack of funding, and at a specific level, because I don't think that it gets brought up well enough. Many school districts are having to increase the PTR as a result of not knowing what their will be, and they have a great deal of chaos. In a 30 by 30 classroom, which is the normal size for a classroom, that would be 900 square feet. And if the PTR is 30 plus one teacher, that amounts to 29 square feet per student. A prisoner in solitary confinement has a 6 by 9 foot cell. That's 54 square feet. What happens when a student passes gas, has a meltdown, or throws up? I mean, these are real things that happen in classrooms, and I don't think that they're being discussed adequately. I would like to say, as I've listened today, I've been very concerned that I feel that house education should be the champion for education, and you've delved quite heavily into the financing, which is the responsibility of the finance committee. I'm concerned that you may have circumvented some of their right to do their job by having had this 3-4 vote, which is very unsettling for people, because it tends to appear that it may be a political vote as opposed to ideological. And lastly, I do think it's important for committee members to explain their positions. Just asking a member to account for their position is not the same as calling them out for that testimony.
Next, we have Will Muldoon. Will, if you could please put your name on the record and begin your testimony. Mr. Muldoon, are you with us?
Yeah, good morning. Thank you, Co-Chair Allard and members of the committee. My name is Will Muldoon, and I'm testifying on my own behalf. I support various sections of House Bill 392. The 680 BSA increase would bring in an additional $5.2 million for state support for Juno, but probably equally as important would increase the local contribution cap. The transportation increase is about 16.3%, which is much needed after more than a decade of adjusting that fund. I'm against a lot of the charter school language, primarily because it sounds like it's a non-starter in the Senate, and I think that passing stuff we know to fail later isn't really good governance there. And I'd also just like to align myself in closing with the comments made by Ms. Ward earlier that this has been extremely difficult to follow, and I feel that members have been pretty indecorous. And, you know, it's sad that a committee that couldn't meet for 3 weeks is more dysfunctional when they finally do meet. And so I hope you guys take a moment to reflect on that, and I encourage you all to do better. Thank you, and have a good day.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Kim Harnish. If you could please put your name on the record and begin your test. Oh, they're all. Okay. It looks like that's all the members that we have, community members that are testifying online. I will close public testimony. For those watching online that did not get a chance to testify, you can submit your written testimony on HB 392 to the committee at house.education@aklake.gov, and it will be uploaded into the public record. Vice Chair or Co-Chair Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Allard. I would move to report from committee, substitute for House Bill 392, Work Order 33-LS1453/T, as amended from committee, with individual recommendations, attached fiscal notes, and authority for alleged legal to make technical and conforming changes.
Object.
There is an objection. Could you please call the roll?
Representative McCormick.
No.
Representative McKay.
Yes.
Representative Himshu.
No.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Prox.
Yes.
Co-Chair Allard.
Yes.
Co-Chair Ruffridge.
Yes.
5 yeas, 2 nays.
It is reported from the Education Committee. Oh, 5 yeas and 2 nays. The substitute Committee Substitute HB 392 passes. It's reported from Education Committee with the individual recommendations attached, fiscal notes, and authority for legal services to make technical and conforming changes. That concludes our business for today. If the committee could please stand by to sign. The House Education Committee will meet again on Wednesday, April the 10th at 8 a.m. to hear. That's it for this time. And that's it. So seeing no other business before the committee, we'll adjourn and let the time reflect 10 a.m.